Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
Good morning and welcome to it. It is the Home Improvement Show with me, Dan Laxer, in for Ken, and Walter Assey of Renovco. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Always. I haven't seen you in a while.
I've been very busy.
I know.
Plus, Ken's been here and this is his show.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get into it at 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and you can even text your questions in to 514-800. Any questions you may have about, maybe even getting your house ready for winter, do-it-yourselfing, renovations, et cetera. In terms of getting your house ready for winter, is it time to, you know, clean out the chimney or the fireplace?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's often forgotten or not looked after, especially in this time of an age we seem to need more and more auxiliary type of heating devices because of the electrical outages that we've been blessed for in Quebec.
Yes.
Because of the weather and many other factors. So I know we tend to be more reliant, and there are some code changes to fireplaces, but in case of emergencies and, you know, you still have the older fireplace and you think you might use it for XYZ reason, then you need to have it swept, because if not, it can cause you smoke backup damage, which is horrendous because you'll have smoke, soot all over the house. Certain cases, of course, fires and what have you. So although it's not allowed to be used anymore, if you think you're going to ever use it in case of emergency, just make sure that it's done, because since we don't use it as much, since it's not legal anymore to use the older types, we tend to forget to maintain them. In the old days, we would have a chimney sweep every year. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, there is also a misconception about wood-burning fireplaces. They're not, you could adapt them to the new regulations. All what you need to do is a new insert and a new liner, and you could still burn wood, except it's going to be a slow combustion type of a fireplace. So it's way more efficient, it's way better for the environment, and it heats out the house a lot more. So that's something you can look at, because, you know, sometimes we don't like electric fireplaces or propane fireplaces. You want more that natural look. You can still have it, except you have to go with a slow combustion type of unit. And then you're good to go. You can use it all winter long.
What would you be burning in that?
Wood, firewood. It looks exactly like your fireplace that you have right now, except that it's slow combustion. It's made to emit less off gassing and you know, pollute the environment a lot less. So it's more within the parameters that they will allow for the environment.
That's what I was just going to ask, because quite frankly, I've lost touch with what the regulations are.
Yes, I mean, a lot of people did, because they kept on changing them. And right now, you could do that. And you know, it's also, to be quite frank with you, I even encourage it. If it's not gonna be the firewood slow burning, you could have some type of propane that works without electricity. Just, you know, especially in the, you know, if we miss electricity in January or February, your main concern is frozen pipes, and that could wreak havoc into your house, as you might know. So, you know, look into that. Now is the time. Don't do it in February when everybody misses electricity, or January or what have you. If you need to use the old one, because in case of emergency, who cares? That's what you're going to probably say. It's still not legal, but
yeah,
if it's minus 40 in your house outside and you need to warm up, well, you're going to do what you need to do.
Absolutely.
Just make sure that if that's what you're going to be reliant on, that at least it's working well and it's functional.
You mentioned frozen pipes. The old wisdom used to be, if you're going away somewhere, to turn the tap on a little tiny bit so the little bit of water is running through. Does that still hold?
I don't like that idea, because if you have a blocked sink or a blocked pipe, it's going to overflow. Flow. What you could always do is drain the pipes and shut off the water.
Yeah.
And that way,
that would make more sense.
Yeah. It's way less risky that way. And you don't have to worry about, you know, even if there's an issue, well, the water is closed. Mm-hmm. There's new systems now. You have the AquaTrip type of system by which it detects also any flow of water, detects water pressure, and after a certain amount of minutes, you can program it, and it will automatically shut off the water if you're not home. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a broken pipe and you're not home, you're at work, the system itself can detect the pressure and poof, it shut off the water automatically. So that might be an interesting thing. And I know that insurance companies give you discount when you have that type of system. Mm-hmm. And you can also have the water sensors to go with it. So you have these even like better little pucks.
Yeah.
And you put them in different strategic places. And in case the water, you see that the water, it detects water on the floor, automatically it triggers the alarm. It's linked to the alarm
yes,
station.
Yes, I've seen those. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
That gives you a very big discount.
All right. Why don't we head to the phones at 514-790-0800. And we'll start off in LaSalle with Carmine. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about insulating a basement wall.
Yeah.
I want to use a rigid styrofoam, like a 2-inch. I think that's 11 R value. And then I want to add a stud wall and add fiberglass bats. Mm-hmm. I had a question, whether do I add another vapor barrier on top of that? I was afraid it would cause an issue in between the styrofoam and that plastic sheathing.
So, I mean, look, the idea with the vapor barrier is you want it to be the closest as possible to the warm part of the house. Okay. Now, the styrofoam itself, if it's well done, tongue and groove, and you have a smooth foundation, it can act as its own vapor barrier. But there's many conditions to go with that. And more often than not, these conditions are not met. So you do need to have the type of foundation that is really smooth. The installation have to be extremely accurate and precise, that is properly glued and tongue and grooved. So it's very often not met. Very often we don't meet these conditions. So what I would recommend, putting an additional vapor barrier closer to the drywall is going to be a good idea in this case. Simply because you probably will not be able to give proper vapor barrier due to the you know, the foundation wall itself being not smooth, and you know, and the installation process being not accurate.
What about if I just use the styrofoam? What is the R value required on a basement wall in Canada?
You technically, if you want to go to the real science, they need R40. You can never achieve that. So by you doing what you're doing, you're probably going to get to R30, because if you go with an R20, actually R12, R11, that's 23, and if you calculate 1 and 1, that's you're getting R24 with what you're doing. Now, another way that you might want to do that might actually, because you're combining both and then both insulations, is if you build your stud walls and you just urethane. That will give you everything you need. It will give you more R value, because don't forget, when you are going to urethane your wall, you're keeping a gap from the foundation.
Yeah.
Because you're building your 2x4s a couple of inches away.
Yeah.
So that will give you more depth. So with that, you could get at least 4 inches out of the urethane, and that will create you the type of vapor barrier you need. Because any time you exceed R 3 inches in urethane, you're good with vapor barrier.
Okay.
So that will give you a better R value. It's a way better insulation, for many reasons. One of them, and the most important one, urethane is waterproof. It's humidity proof, meaning if it gets wet or if it gets moist, it doesn't lose the R value. Whereas fiberglass will lose the R value as soon as it gets wet. And then you have all these pockets of thermal conductivity that will wreak havoc into your exterior wall.
But so, the urethane is sprayed, right? The price is
Because you're going with urethane and fiberglass, now you're being very comparable to urethane. You're very close to urethane. So I might as well you do it in urethane, a way better, more superior product that is done in a way that you can almost... And what I really like about it is that you can do the rim joist with it, which you should do the rim joist with, because most people do the rim joist with fiberglass.
Mm-hmm.
It's not adequate. Whereas when you go with urethane, you need to go with urethane anyways for the rim joist. You just, you know, if you're calling in the supplier to do it, might as well do all your wall.
And it'll be more cost-effective in the long run.
It's anywhere between $260 to $3 a square foot, if you want to quantify it into a dollar value.
All right. Thanks for the call, Carmine. Hope that helped.
Thank you.
514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and 1-800-491-CJD. You can even text in to 514-800 questions for Walter at Walter Assey of Renovco. And we do have a couple of more questions coming up, one about home heating in Saint-Eustache and another one about basement laundry rooms in Mont-Tremblant.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
With Walter Assey from Renovco and me, Dan Laxer, and we'll go right back to the phones in Saint-Eustache. Hi there, Alexander.
Hello. I'd like to ask a simple question.
Sure.
I have a house that underneath you have what you call a 134-foot storage basement there, non-insulated, not heated yet. I have a water tank in there, and I have the four walls surrounding the building now. What I was thinking of doing, I'll ask a question and I'll listen to your expert advice on it.
All right.
I was thinking of installing a floor-based heater. I think it's a 6-foot. I have a 6-foot or my choice of a 3-foot floor-based heater. And I'd like to connect it directly to the fuse box 220 with our thermostat. I was wondering if that is, first off, possible, and second of all, safe. Can you answer that question for me while I listen?
Yes. I just want to ask you, you said you want to install a baseboard heater in a non-insulated crawl space. Am I correct?
No. Well, yeah, okay, crawl space, if that's what you want to call it. It's an open all underneath the house is open. There's no walls, dividing, nothing. It's just for...
okay, but there's no insulation on the exterior wall.
There's no insulation. Okay. No insulation, just a... Okay.
And
I'm doing that just so that my pipes don't freeze, because pipes are running under the floorboards.
Okay.
And I don't want to have to start insulating all the pipes, because that's
okay. Let me start by telling you what your minimum requirements are, and then, I mean, you could do whatever you like. So for foundation walls, the minimum insulation factor you should have would be R17. 0.5, to be precise.
Mm-hmm. Styrofoam?
Sorry?
That would be styrofoam.
Styrofoam will give you about R11, if you're going to go with the 2 inches, okay? But I mean, putting something is better than nothing. When you're going to go with baseboard, and it's going to be, my answer to you is going to get a little bit more complicated, so buckle up. You can install a baseboard heater. It will help for sure. It is safe, but you're going to overwork it because you have a non-insulated space that is going to be, so the heater is going to be working overtime. Now, I'm sure you're going to be setting it at, you know, I don't know, 12, 15, 10 degrees. But still going to work because it's going to be, you know, it has to heat up the space. So that will be your major challenge in this. Now, what your minimum requirement will be, like I said, would be R17 for it to be more efficient and for you to not pay on overheating. There's many ways to do that. Styrofoam by itself is not one, because now we're not cold. Styrofoam is flammable.
Mm-hmm.
So is urethane. If you don't put any type of finish, like drywall that is fire tape, not just the drywall itself, then you are not really to code. So if you have an insurance inspection, you won't pass that inspection. So having said that, what I want to say is the following. What you do is you could do the baseboard heater. You could survey your energy bills and see if you don't want to go throughout the whole thing. If you you do want to go and bring it up a notch higher, you could urethane the walls and put something called ignifuge, which is a type of a cement that is sprayed on the urethane, and that becomes your fire protection. Okay, it's an added cost, but it's done very quickly. Meaning the same day you do the urethane, another truck comes, that the ignifuge, and that makes you, if you wish, fire compliant, if you wish, because that is a fire coating that will create the barrier between the two. So that will be the best way to go.
All right, there you go. Okay.
The other thing is with the fact that you're putting a heater, it helps decrease the humidity in that area. So that's also another added value there.
All right. Hope that helps. From there, we go to Mont-Tremblant. Hi there, Charles.
Hello.
How can we help?
So I want to put a washing machine in my basement. The basement is finished. There's a cement slab, and the drain to the septic tank is at ceiling level. Mm-hmm. I want to drain the washing machine into a laundry sink, and from there, a drain pump at floor level to the sewage line. I can't go below the cement slab because it's on bedrock. Is a drain pump, such as is made by Saniflow, a reasonable solution?
I believe it's your only solution.
Is there a danger with using this type of equipment?
I mean, there are pumps from Saniflow that are made specifically for that reason. We even have them in toilets. It's, you know, in the back of the toilet, you have that type of a pump, and it's what you call a surface pump. It does not go in the concrete for that exact same reason. So yes, they do exist. What I would caution against is not to do what a lot of people do in this case, which means bringing the drainage into the sump pump pit and then the pit pumps it out. That is not allowed. But Saniflow does have pumps for laundry sinks, for washing machines, I should say, that is made to pump the water into the septic system, but are surface mounted.
Is there a problem with this type of installation that I'm facing?
There should not be. It's just a question of ensuring that it's well maintained and periodically checking it out. But usually there's no problem whatsoever. They're 100% safe.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for the call. 514-790-0800. Star Talk on Bell Mobility, 1-800-491-CJD. For your calls to Walter Assey. We got a couple of texts in. We were talking about fireplaces before. This person texts and says, my fireplace is for ambiance only. Can it still be used for heating, or can it be modified for heating purposes and comply with the new rules?
Well, it depends what type of fireplace he's talking about. Because, I mean, you can have electric, ambient, you can have many of them. The fact of the matter is that a lot of the new ones, they do both. Mm-hmm. So like the propane ones, they have a mounted fan on them that does amazing work as well. Mm-hmm. The new compliant ones are, especially the wood-burning ones, are so efficient that they could literally heat up your whole house in certain cases. Mm-hmm. Because it's a slow burning process. And, you know, you could put a log in and it will last. You would not believe how long it will last in the fireplace. So there is a good turn of events on the fact that, you know, they've modified a lot of these units to be a lot more efficient, but it's serving a better purpose in general. So, you know, you will see that you will save money on firewood in this case, and it will heat up a lot more and a lot longer.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you for that. And thanks for the text. We'll get to Edward in Longueuil and Janet in NDG on the other side of the 9:30 news with Don Kagan Fleming.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Texts are coming in, but I want to get to the calls before we get to the texts. People have been waiting a while. Vicky and NDG, you have a plumbing question.
Hi.
Hi.
So I'll try to make the explanation quick.
All right.
I own a duplex, and we have an apartment in the basement. There was a major fire there a year ago. We just finished renos, and we moved in yesterday. So the plumbing really hasn't been used a lot. And over the past 2 days when we were moving in, there was a blockage in the toilet in the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
When I got up this morning, I'm hearing a gurgling sound coming from my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down into the basement, and I can feel and hear the water in the main stack.
Mm-hmm.
It almost sounds like it's gurgling back up into it. There's no water being used currently. And some of the plumbing in the basement was rerouted. So nothing was added. There was two bathrooms. There was a kitchen before. And now I'm concerned that water is going to come back up through the main stack and into my house.
Okay.
Is that jackhammer coming from your house?
Oh, no. I'm driving okay. down the street.
So, Vicky, the main thing you mentioned and might be the culprit is you said you had a fire and then you had a major renovation done recently, right?
Yeah, after the fire, they gutted the entire basement, the apartment. Yeah. And while they did it, we rerouted some of the plumbing to move the bathrooms and the kitchen just to be in code.
Okay. So what usually happens, unfortunately, in major renovations that we see it often, is construction debris going into the drains. And that is very common because in construction sites, the way it works is very simple. A lot of specialized trades have their blinders on. So if they're a demolition crew, that's what they do. If they're plumbers, they worry about the plumbing. But nobody sees the big picture if you don't have a maestro, if you wish, looking at all of these things and kind of, you know, ensuring that everybody is doing their job and seeing beyond what the other person is doing. So what you probably would have if you would pass a camera is you were going to have old rags, you're going to have drywall debris, you're going to have wood debris potentially going into the drain and creating that. So you would need to have a camera inspection and ask for a plumber that have pressure wash a fish, meaning when they going to be fishing that pipe, they can pressure wash because not every a plumber have that. You might need to flush out the drains, and you need high pressure for that in certain cases, specifically if there's way too much debris. In certain cases, we've seen that there was ceramic grout, and that hardens, and that becomes extremely difficult to get rid of. So with the camera, the plumber can tell what he's like up against, and he could use the adequate fish for that. But pressure washing is probably what you're going to need.
Okay. My battle is with the contractor from the insurance, which is always fun to deal with.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations or I know you guys don't give recommendations, but any plumbers?
Well, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just kind of reorient a little bit in this. Your battle is with the contractor of the insurance. So what I want to do is I want to send you back to the insurance adjuster.
Okay.
And you're going to be explaining for him what the situation is. And then he's going to force that contractor back into your home. Now, it is it's a bit of a very touchy thing because, you know, they work together and what have you. So you're always having objective representation to your side. But at least you'll have a bit more push this way. No, if that doesn't work, what you could do is you live in which area, Vicky? NDG?
NDG,
okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anybody in your area, like DeCary Plumbing or there's Levine, there's DeCary Plumbing, there's Westmount Plumbing as well. They're all in your area.
Yeah.
And what you do is you're going to ask them to give you a copy of the camera inspection, a DVD, in order, or a stick, actually. They're going to give you a stick. And the reason you're going to do that is because if you do find construction debris, now you can go against the contractor and get the insurance company to pay you for that inspection and the cleaning up of the drains.
Okay. All right. My worry is, can I still use the rest of my plumbing? Because I hear it in the stack. I'm worried that it's going to come up out of my toilet in the first floor.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I don't know what is the extent of the blockage. If you're going to still use your plumbing, do it with extreme caution, I would say. Because I don't know. It could be a branchement that is blocked and not the main drain, main stack. So I can't really tell you that.
Right.
So what you would want to do is, I mean, you could start the, today. This whole process started today. But I would send an email to the contractor saying, look, I asked you to come and unblock my drain because after your renos, all my drains are blocked. And you have refused. Yeah. So I'm calling ex-plumber to come and I'm going to send you the bill. Okay, or I give you 24 hours or 48 hours to come because it's an emergency for me. And if he doesn't, then it's on him, and you are way stronger legally that way.
Okay, wonderful.
All right, thanks for the call, Vicky.
Thank
Have a good
you
day.
So much. You too.
Pleasure, Edward in Longueuil. What's going on with your bathroom?
Thanks for taking my call. And a question for Walter.
Yeah.
My brother lives on the top floor in a three-level apartment, and his bathroom is okay. I mean, his toilet is okay. But the neighbor downstairs is complaining that the guy who came to fix it says the problem is clogged because of the apartment upstairs. But my brother's apartment is okay. Is this a possibility?
Well, okay. So, I mean, yes and no. It could be that the apartment upstairs have sent some debris that went down the drain and got stuck somewhere between the first floor, the ground floor apartment and the basement. But it's very hard to prove. I mean, the blockage, if it's coming strictly from your brother's apartment and staying there, then you would have the problem. He would have the problem. But if it's further down the pipe, then no. I mean, obviously, it could be related to your brother or the tenant. In this case, is very difficult to tell. There's, you know, for them to say it's coming from your brother upstairs, I don't know how they would actually be able to determine that. It's very difficult to determine.
So they would need a camera inspection?
Well, I mean, even if they do a camera inspection, let's say it's a diaper that went down that drain. It's not like there's a name on it and an apartment number, right? So it's going to be hard to determine. You know, the only way, I mean, we see these types of arguments is, for example, the person that lives on the ground floor is the owner, and they're very, very particular about what they put down the drain, and then the one upstairs is the tenant. So they think, okay, they're probably less careful. That's why they say, look, I know what I put in my toilet, so it's for you, it's not me. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much how the argument is going to go. But as far as a camera inspection, that won't help to see who did it or how it was done. Just needs to be unblocked, I guess.
Yeah, so never mind whose quote-unquote fault it is.
That's
just
right.
Get it done.
Exactly.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back. By the way, you can also listen to the show on the iHeartRadio app. Anywhere you go, it gives you shows like this, breaking news from CTV, up to the minute traffic and weather, in-depth interviews, compelling conversation from all your favorite shows. You can also have access to the podcast, the Andrew Carter podcast, the Big Five with Elias, Vashi Capellos, Montreal Now, access to hundreds of other local, national, international radio stations, and it's all free right hit your fingertips, the iHeartRadio app. Download it today. All right. I promised we were going to get to Janet in NDG. Hi, Janet.
I wanted to know. I know that steam saunas can be installed in home showers now, but what about infrared saunas?
Infrared saunas are becoming more popular. Because they tend to, I mean, that's what they've seen so far, that it's more, it have more therapeutic, if you wish, benefits.
That's what I've heard.
And it's actually cheaper to operate than conventional saunas.
How does an infrared sauna work?
So it's actually a light that, believe it or not, the way it works is it's a type of sauna that uses light to make heat.
Okay.
Okay. So this type of sauna is sometimes called an infrared sauna or far infrared sauna. It's the infrared waves that fall in, like, on the light spectrum, if you wish. And it's known to have better therapeutic qualities. It's cheaper to operate, and it's becoming more and more popular now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely, Janet, from what I've heard, it's actually a good thing to have.
Okay, so it is possible. Okay, I just thought because of all the lights and that because I want to have it in my shower. So I can either take a shower or I can do the sauna.
Ah.
Oh, okay. So
I don't want a separate, installation.
To be quite frank with you, I don't know how the two combine together.
Okay.
I know that it's used more in saunas, so I can't really tell you. I can do my homework and a bit of research. I've never seen it installed in a combo like that.
But
I could definitely get back to you on that after I speak to my supplier.
Okay. I'd love to hear.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And out to Dollar Des Ormeaux. This is Engel.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could help me with them. You were mentioning early on... Good morning, first of all, Walt.
Good morning.
You were mentioning earlier in the show that when you leave the house for the winter and you're turning the water off, that you can close the main valve and then open the taps to vent the water.
Mm-hmm.
What I was wondering is, do you leave the taps open or do you close them?
The idea behind opening the taps is to drain whatever water is left in the pipes. Once that is done, you could close them back because at this point there's no more water in the pipe. You could even keep them open if you wish. The only risk that you run when you keep them open is when you put the water back on. You know,
Did
you forget a faucet somewhere that is open that you didn't know about?
Right.
So that's why I would say, once you're sure that you've drained the water, you could close them up. Now, having said that, in a very cold day, if you are living, if you are in the city, and you don't want to shut off the water, you can let the water drip in the problematic areas that you know they usually freeze or might freeze because of a cold draft that you feel. That you can have a trickle of the faucet coming down, and that will help avoid freezing in the winter. So, it's a kind of a balancing act, really. But you could close the water after you've ensured that all the drains have been properly drained, the toilet and everything else.
So you flush the toilet as many times as necessary to void the toilet tank?
You want the toilet tank to be emptied. And what you would also do, another thing that it's often, you want to put some type of lave-vitre in the toilet tank to avoid the water in the toilet itself, not the tank, in the toilet itself to freeze. Antifreeze, that's correct. Thank you.
Is it best to, is it good enough to turn the water off, let's say, specifically below a toilet and below a sink, or is it better to do it at source, like in the basement?
Well, look, the issue is if you do have shut off valves on every appliance, it's doable. The problem is in a lot of cases, you don't have it particularly in the shower area. So not every shower faucet have it. So by doing so, you might forget a few devices, and if you're unlucky, that's where things are going to go wrong and you're going to have issues. So you're always better off when you're leaving to shut it off at the source.
Okay.
Yeah,
that way you make sure that, you didn't forget anything and you don't keep any room for speculation or, oh my God, I forgot this, I forgot that. I've never seen a home that personally, I'm sure they exist, that have a shut off valve for every.
You're absolutely right. So yeah. Is the procedure then, you go ahead and you shut down the water at source, and then you turn on the faucets, empty them out?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Engel, have we answered your question?
Yes, thank you for that, Walter. I have another question. May I ask it?
I don't know if we have time. Do we have time, Jimmy? One more quick question, yeah.
Two-sided wood-burning fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
Is it legal in Montreal?
I didn't see that it was illegal, so I think yes. I've seen them being installed. I believe Town and Country have these, as the brand Town and Country. So as long as the slow combustion and you have the adequate liner, you don't have an issue.
Okay. That actually answered two questions at once. That's great. Thank you very much, Walter.
All pleasure. Right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It's been the Home Improvement Show. What is this show called? Is it the Trivia Show? Is it Weekends with Ken? Walter asks you.
Too many shows, too little time. Huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for doing this. We'll see you again next week.
Of course.
Yeah. Thank you, Jimmy G. Stay tuned for the 10 o'clock news, the Don, Cake, and Fleming. Thereafter, the Car Show with Lisa Christensen.